Okay, y'all, let's get on right into Matthew 19 tonight. Matthew 19. So we're going to cover one of the most emotional topics, really, that we could talk about, the topic of marriage tonight. Tonight, we're going to talk about marriage. Next week, we're talking about money. So Matthew 19 is a heavy hitter. I want to start this class with a prayer. Let's pray together. Our God, as we come before your word this evening, we again marvel at the fact that you have spoken to us through your Son, and you have spoken truth to us, truth that is not meant to condemn us, but truth that is meant to heal us from the brokenness of sin. We are sick, we are broken, and we need your healing. God, tonight I recognize that we are going to talk through a text that is filled with difficulties, not rationally so much as it is emotionally for us. And I pray, Father, that you lead us to your wisdom, that you lead us to healing, and that you lead us to be the image that you would have us to be. Through Jesus we pray. Amen. So y'all, tonight, I just want to tell y'all how I plan to address this text. Every verse of Matthew, of course, has had volumes written on it. Matthew 19, 1 through 12 has written libraries about it. Easily we could get mired in every last letter almost of this section. What I'm going to do tonight is really just try to teach the text. I will do a sermon series about the intricacies of marriage and divorce. And as you all have questions, I would really welcome you to private chat those to me tonight. As we talk through things that you're like, hey, what about this? What about this? What about this? I'm not going to cover a lot of what ifs tonight, because that's just not what Matthew 19 does. We're going to just try to talk through the text. And as you have questions, I'm more than happy to entertain those questions and talk through them either personally or in a sermon series at a later time. But really would encourage you to private chat those, because I really don't want cans of worms open tonight. I'll be quite honest. And if we have cans of worms open, I'm going to close them down pretty quick, because we just need to teach the text. I think this text is a very powerful and important one, but it's one that we just need to listen to. Okay, so let's just go ahead and read this text. Eric, if you will, read the whole thing for me. Matthew 19, 1 through 12.
Now, when Jesus had finished these sayings, he went away from Galilee and entered the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. And large crowds followed him, and he healed them there. And Pharisees came up to him and tested him by asking, "Is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause?" He answered, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them both male and female? And said, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate." They said to him, "Why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and to send her away?" He said to them, "Because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery." The disciples said to him, "If such is the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry." But he said to them, "Not everyone can receive this saying, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who have been so from birth, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by men. And there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Let the one who's able to receive this, receive it."
Okay. Thanks, Eric. So we have to note where this teaching is coming from. I said last week, or last time we were in Matthew 18, that Matthew 18 through 20 is really the communal form of the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5 through 7, which is the Sermon on the Mount, is much more individually oriented. It talks through individual behaviors and individual actions and individual attitudes and individual intentions. Matthew 18 through 20 is much more communally focused. Everything in Matthew 18 through 20 has this larger communal sense to it. There's a lot of overlap between them. I think I've given you all a chart before showing that. It, to me, is so interesting that Matthew situates this text right after talking about forgiveness. This is not happenstance by any means. If you look at Matthew 19, verse 1, so when Jesus had finished these sayings, he went away from Galilee and entered the region of Judea beyond the Jordan, and large crowd followed him, and he healed them there. I love verse 2. I'll tell you all my take on it. Jesus has left Galilee, which he will never return to Galilee until after he's been crucified and resurrected, which is just dull. Never will he return to Galilee with that body, but with the spiritual body he will receive from the Lord. Then he goes back to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan, which now he is making his way toward Jerusalem. And as we go through the rest of Matthew, leading up to Matthew 27 with the crucifixion, Jesus is going to be working toward Jerusalem. And then a large crowd followed him and he healed them there. It doesn't seem to me that Jesus necessarily is healing them of physical ailments here. I think much more likely what verse 2 is talking about is that Jesus is healing them of their sickness of sin here. Because what you're going to see Jesus do in Matthew 19 into Matthew 20, this really forms one whole section of the book, is he's going to be teaching them. You're going to find a healing of blind men come at the very end of chapter 20. But other than that, you just have Jesus healing. This is very similar to Exodus 15, where God says, I, Yahweh, am your healer. It seems that Jesus is healing them of their sickness of sin, which, of course, is a perfect connection to what my sermon Sunday morning focused on. And a part of this healing is what he has just talked about with forgiveness and what he's also talking about marriage. And we need to see this as a healing text, and it needs to be seen as such. I mean, very briefly, we could talk for hours about the questions and conundrums and diseases that come from our society within marriage, but I could not think of any domain of existence that is more conflict filled, that is more emotionally laden, that is more controversial in our society than that of marriage. Who can marry who? What does a good marriage look like? Why should I marry? What should sex in that marriage looks like? I mean, gracious, so many things that just marriage within our society becomes not a blessing, but a curse. What Jesus is trying to do here is offer healing. He's trying to offer healing to a world that is broken. So verse 3, the Pharisees came up to him and tested him. Who earlier in Matthew has tested Jesus?
Scribes and the Pharisees.
The scribes and the Pharisees. And then back to Matthew 4, who tested Jesus?
Oh, Satan.
Satan. This is the exact word used in Matthew 4, verse 3 for the adversary. Whereas in Matthew 4, the adversary the Spirit led Jesus out to the wilderness and the adversary tested him. Here you now have the Pharisees testing him. And oh, they're going to get him. They're going to get him. They say, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? Now, you can go back and read Josephus and other early first century writers, Second Temple Judaism, about this. There was, in their day, as in our day, no issue more complicated or controversial than that of marriage. If I could give a modern day equivalent to this, this is like going up to someone today and asking, is it lawful for two men to become married? Anyone in America is going to have a very strong opinion about that, okay? And you could just imagine going up to a rabbi or a teacher today and immediately asking, was it lawful for two men to get married? They are trying to open the largest controversy that they can, trying to test Jesus. Because here's what they're going to be able to do. The Pharisees were divided on this issue. There were some Pharisees that claimed, hey, yeah, anybody can get divorced for any reason. Others claim, no, there's only specific reasons you can get divorced. Jesus answers one way, Ha! He's cut off his influence from half of the Pharisees. He answers another way. Now he's a heretic. They're trying to test him. They're trying to say, answer this, answer this. And I will say you all, just very briefly, not only should we look at this text and learn about marriage and God's intent for it, but I think there's a great deal we can learn from this about how to deal with controversy. I mean, let's talk through this for a second. Our world wants us to be pinned on one side or the other of every controversy. Does Jesus allow himself to get pinpointed on one side of a controversy? Does he?
No.
No. What does Jesus do?
He tries to bring both sides together.
Yeah. He says, and this is brilliant how he does it. He comes in a roundabout way of saying, I really don't agree with the question. So this is the actual way that we should think about this. I think there's a great deal of wisdom for that in us, that our society is so splintered and divided on everything. You deal with it from gay marriage. You deal with it to Donald Trump. You deal with it to vaccines. Gracious, our society is split on everything. Rather than giving into the divide, maybe we need to exercise a bit more wisdom and not give into it. Now, how do we do that? And how do we live it out? Here's the call for wisdom. But I do think we need to learn this from Jesus Christ. Verse 4.
Can I have one question?
Yeah, please, Eric.
Is there a sense in where they're trying to even get him to fall into, but trying to lure him into a trap, like the same one that John the Baptist sprung, and get him to talk bad about even the rulers of that day participating in this, and it got John killed. And let's see if we can test him and get him to even fall into that trap.
That's where Herod was in Galilee. Totally right. This is for them not merely a this is not an innocent little Israelite wanting to know information from the master teacher. This is them wanting to get him embroiled in the largest political controversy they have. What Eric's alluding to, y'all, is if you go back to Matthew 14, okay, you go back to Matthew 14, you read of Herod the Tetrarch. Herod had been divorced, and this created a huge, not just religious, but political controversy in Israel. Because he is now the ruler of this region. They're trying to get Jesus involved, not only in their religious controversy, but in the political controversy. Because now he's going to have to take a side in this whole Herod thing. This is not merely, Rabbi, tell me, how do you interpret the Torah? This is, Rabbi, do you support Trump or do you not?
Yeah.
That's really what they're trying to do here. Okay? So, let's read the question again. It's really important to note this. Eric, verse 3 again, please.
The Pharisees came up to him and tested him by asking, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause?
Okay, here's the question. Is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? Now, let's just go ahead and read back in Deuteronomy 24. This was the text that they were trying to get Jesus to comment on. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 24, which this is a doozy of a text. Even the grammatical construction of this is a very complicated text. This is not, thou shalt not lie. let's read this. Heath, when you get there, Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4.
When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, when she has departed from his house and goes and becomes another man's wife, if the latter husband detests her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies who took her to be his wife, then the former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled, for that is an abomination before the Lord. and you shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance.
Okay. Their division came in that one phrase in verse 1. His translation read, I'm pretty sure, the same way mine did. When a man takes a wife and marries her, if she finds no favor in his eyes because she has some indecency. Heath, I think it's what yours read as well. Some indecency.
Uncleanness, same thing.
Some uncleanness. Okay, some uncleanness. This is the question here, okay? In Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 1.
Focus.
Say what, Kirby?
Focus your camera.
Focus.
Thank you. For me just a minute, Eric. Thank you. Spell that for me, Lord. Decency.
C E N C. Or E N. Oh my goodness.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. I'm talking about later time. Everywhere. This is the question. Okay. There's two different strands of Judaism that are giving different focus. The stricter sect of the Pharisees is saying that it is only for the cause of indecency, which would be, as they take it, adultery, that one could divorce. This other school over here says, no, we need to focus on some. That's a relative term. And there could be various ways to understand it. Even within the rabbis of the day, which a lot of these fragments are still around, y'all. The Rabbi Hillel, Rabbi Shammai, some of y'all may have heard these in sermons before. Rabbi Hillel and Rabbi Shammai were the ones that had the two schools. You can still find a lot of their original writings today. This was the controversy. Give weight to some. Or give weight to the indecency, which they would see as adultery. They're wanting Jesus to come in and pick a side. Which side is Jesus going to take in this? Now, I want to show this real quick in Deuteronomy 24. Deuteronomy 24 is not chiefly about divorce. The only command, okay, the only command that is given here comes in verse 4. Here you have a wife that has been put away for some indecency. He and her divorce. Verse 2, she then remarries. Verse 3, divorces again. Verse 4, then the former husband, the first who sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife after she has been defiled, for that is an abomination before Yahweh. That's the only command here in this text. So I want to note here, even Deuteronomy 24 is not chiefly about who can divorce and who cannot. The command in Deuteronomy 24 is chiefly about you cannot remarry a wife that you've previously divorced. That's what Deuteronomy 24 is chiefly about. Now, I had some other passages on here I wanted y'all to read. I'm not going to work us through these tonight. I will another time, I promise. But Exodus 21 is about a whole different thing. Exodus 24 is about a whole other different circumstance. They are wanting Jesus to speak to Deuteronomy 24. Jesus, they ask in verse 3 of Matthew 19, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause, for some reason, or only for indecency?
Or for any indecency.
Or for any indecency, yeah. Choose a side, Jesus. Choose a side. Notice his answer, verse 4. He answered, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife. I think King James there says cling to. Do you have your King James open, Bruce?
Cleave.
Thank you. Cleave. Thank you. Leave and cleave. Thank you. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast or cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Now, y'all, this is my question too. Where does Jesus quote from here in verses 4 and 5? Where does Jesus quote from?
Genesis 2:24.
Very good. Genesis 2:24 and 25. This is the... I'm not even going to put an adjective in front of this. This is the principle of marriage in the Bible. Okay? This is the principle of marriage in the Bible. Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. I'm very tempted to just end class tonight and say, let's just think about this text. because I don't want our discussion to devolve into what if. According to the master teacher, this is the principle of marriage. If you were to ask Jesus, what would you want us to know about marriage? Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? And said, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. Now, is this the view that our society has of marriage? Of course not. I mean, some of these dating shows, I'm not going to rant tonight, I promise. But some of these dating shows about blind marriage and even The Bachelor, and goodness gracious, are just such a degradation to marriage. I rarely offer my moral application as a general principle, but I'm going to. If y'all are filling your minds with these shows like The Bachelor or any of these other marriage shows, please stop. Just please stop. I'm serious. Please stop. Y'all, they are such a degradation to marriage. I mean, what business do those of us who follow the Lord Jesus Christ have in that filth? And I don't know any at Manslick, so I'm not calling out any names, I promise. I don't have access to y'all's TV records. But there was another church we were with that there was a group of women that would get together weekly to watch The Bachelor of all ages. And it just, one of the other women, Vicki Brewer, some of y'all know Vicki. I admire Vicki greatly. Vicki finally talked to them and explained why a Christian should not be watching this alone, let alone as a group party. And then, I can't even read the names of some of the Netflix and Amazon shows about dating and marriage and what's come from it. But just please, don't fill your heart with that filth. A man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. Okay. Obviously, the message of Jesus Christ is so counter our culture that now is giving into polyamory. Love between two or between three or more people and all other forms of derivation of this. But Eric, let me ask you, did Jesus answer their question in verse 3? My question didn't make sense. The question they posed in verse 3 did he answer in verses 4-6?
Not directly.
Not directly. And I think that's where the wisdom is. And y'all, I'll tell you, I can just imagine them getting so flustered that he wouldn't just come out and just directly answer their question. But I really think there's a great deal of wisdom for us. I mean, we live in a culture that is now so partisan and polarized. And rather than allowing ourselves to be polarized in one direction or the other on any issue, maybe we should learn from the wisdom of Jesus and broaden the box a bit. I think there's a great deal of wisdom here. Verse 7. They said to him, I think that's an understatement. They retorted back. They rebuked him. They refuted. Why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and send her away? Now, before we go on, we should already note, there's one word in their question that is wrong. It's not just a little bit of out of whack. It's wrong. What word here is wrong?
I think it's probably command.
There you go.
Not command.
Yeah. Moses didn't command this. But y'all, this is what happens. If you build your theology on the rules of exception, you then distort the original teaching. What if? Let the what ifs form your theology. You distort the original message. They said to him, why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and send her away? And you can imagine how high and mighty the Pharisees think they are. We do divorce the right way. We don't just send her away. We give her this official document that says she's divorced. These other Gentiles out here, they don't even give out these papers showing divorce. Look how righteously we do divorce, Jesus. I'm tempted to make application here, but I pray that we're making the application for our own fellowship. They are getting self-righteous in their views of divorce. May the application fall where it may. He said to them, they didn't see this coming. Because of your hardness of heart, Moses, ESV says allowed, the word permitted is my favorite translation here. Because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. Okay, y'all, back in Deuteronomy 24, here's what Jesus says. He says, y'all want me to take a side, and whether it's this or whether it's this, I ain't gonna do it. This, on both sides, is not to be seen as a command. It's to be seen as a permission. Now, already, we should be making application. According to the teachings and the words of Jesus here, must a man divorce his wife for however we define this term? And there are whole books written about these two words, some indecency. Must a man divorce his wife for adultery? Must he? Is it commanded? No. Thank you, Kirby. No. No, 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 no. There were, especially Rabbi Shammai was one of the schools of thought with this, claimed that a woman who dared to commit adultery on her husband, the husband had to divorce her. Jesus saying, no, 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 no. It's not a command. It was a permission. Because of your hardness of heart. Let's camp out on verse 8 for a little bit. I recognize again, and I want to try to do this with as much emotional sensitivity as I can, because I know how difficult these things are in real life. What does that mean, because of your hardness of heart? What does that mean? Because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted.
It means they were not following God.
Right. There you go. This is where we have to go. This is where we have to go. Let me think how to word that. Okay, so sometime I'll do a class on this. I would love this class, probably no one else would. If you look from Exodus, Leviticus, in the first part of Numbers 1 through 9, but then look forward to the book of Deuteronomy, there are actually laws that change between Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, into Deuteronomy. Okay? This gets really technical, and you have to wade through the Torah. But the laws change. Not all. But there are laws that change between Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, into the book of Deuteronomy. Property rights is one very common example of this. Property rights change between the book of Exodus by the time you get to Deuteronomy. It's not that the Lord's eternal will has changed. It's rather that the circumstances, the circumstances have changed. So this is what has happened. Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers were written at Sinai. 40 years pass between this period and the giving of Deuteronomy, which literally means Deuteronomos, second law. 40 years have passed between this, and especially Exodus 21, where you find the original ideas about marriage and divorce, to the time you get to Deuteronomy chapter 24, which it is. It's different from Exodus 24. It's not the same thing. Why is there then this change? Well, Moses has been with the people for 40 years in the wilderness, where if you remember back to our Hebrews class, Hebrews chapter 3, verses 8 through 12, which is taken from Psalm 95, I think verses 9 through 11, but I have to double check that last part. He says there, "Do not harden your hearts as Israel did at Meribah," okay? The condition of the people's hearts was one that was hardened in the wilderness. Why? What Moses had seen was Israel had been unfaithful day after day, year after year. And that's when he gets to Deuteronomy 24 and he says, we need to give this. The original command in Exodus 21 is not enough. Moses, at this point, having served as judge over the people for 40 years, has had to arbiter no telling how many. I mean, y'all, a million people came through the Red Sea, at least. Moses has had to arbiter no telling how many questions about marriage and divorce. And he's recognizing, yeah, this is a reality. And for the sake of the society and for the sake of the people, I'm going to give this command to Deuteronomy 24. But you'll recognize there, it's still a permission. Okay? It's still a permission. God's original intent was leave and cleave. But we live in a world of sin. And y'all know this. We live in a world of unfaithfulness and adultery. It's so many other horrible things. Because of your hardness of heart, Moses gave this. It was a permission. It was not a part of the original Torah. He changed the Torah because of the circumstances. Okay. Let me slow down and make a few comments on this. In the comment section, Helen, I didn't understand your question. What book was I reading from? Which part were you talking about, Helen? I mentioned so many texts. I don't know which
one I was talking about when you were talking about Moses.
Yeah, Deuteronomy 24.
Okay. I'm writing notes. Let's read.
Yeah, the text I've mentioned, Exodus 21, 7 through 11, Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4, Hebrews 3, 8 through 11, and then Psalm 95, 9 through 11. I may have mentioned others, and I can't remember if I have.
Yeah. Maybe they can put the books up there on the chat line or something for me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep, sure will. Y'all questions about this? Questions? I'm going to deal with questions before we get to verse 9. So I'm going to give us a minute to ruminate on this.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, I'm trying to decide what the problem is. I wore the speakers, the headphones, hoping to make
it better. Here we go. It's better. Go ahead.
Okay.
Move your mic up just a little bit.
Okay.
Much better.
Oh, ha! Okay, always an easy fix. Okay, Moses permitted this. I have never really understood how it was that Moses could permit this. If in the beginning God did not permit it, do we assume that there is some private conversation between God and Moses, and God said, okay, just so we can move things along here, and because they're being really, really stubborn on this, you can permit them to divorce? I've never been able to pull that together in my mind.
Jerry, I'm not understanding the question.
Okay. I'll try it again.
Yeah.
Okay. Jesus says very clearly here that they're talking about divorce, and in the beginning it was not so. And then it says that God made them and that they joined and the two became one, and nobody should try to separate that. And then they say, well, then why did Moses command to give her a certificate of divorce? Okay, I understand. He never commanded that. I know that. And then Jesus responds with, because of the hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives. I guess what I'm asking is, how was it that Moses was able to permit something?
Got it. Okay, I get it now. Got it. Okay. So Dorothy, thank you. This is what I think Jerry's asking. When did God give Moses the authority to permit divorce? What changed? So is that the question, Jerry?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this, I think, has to go back to our view of the Torah. Okay. Until I really spent some time digging into Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, I had just assumed it was a list of 613 different commands. That's the most famous number, 613 commands of the Torah. That there was a list of 613 commands that God spoke to the Spirit, the spirit spoke to an angel. An angel then spoke to Moses. Moses then wrote down, and the people then followed. If you look at the Torah, though, the Torah is actually a lot more organic than that. What's changed? Well, certainly, I think what Moses speaks in Deuteronomy 24 is not merely Moses speaking, but it is by the authority of God. Everything that he says in Deuteronomy is certainly by the authority of God. I don't think between Exodus 21, which I really would encourage you all, if you've not read Exodus 21, 7 through 11 recently, please, please, please read that text. It is so neglected in conversations about marriage and divorce, but it's so important. What's changed between Exodus 21 to Deuteronomy 24? I think it's God giving compromise to the people. Let me explain it this way, Jared. Let me explain it this way. Okay. For one of the kids, we have the rule. If your brother or sister takes a toy from you, walk away and let mommy and daddy take care of it. Don't try to get it back yourself. Jessica and I did not proactively give the kids that rule. But we realized very quickly with three that they're going to snatch toys from one another. And when they do, their typical response was to try to gain it back by whatever means necessary. And it wasn't good. But they do better at this now. If one of them tries to take a toy from the other one, now holler for mommy and daddy. Mommy and daddy take care of it. Do Jessica and I want one of the kids stealing toys? No. But we give the permission, if this happens, this is then what you do. Here's what I think's happened. No, this was not God's original intent. But having shepherded Israel for 40 years, Moses has realized kids steal toys from one another, and this is the permission that's granted if that happens. I don't know if I'm answering your question at all, but does that make sense?
You don't even have to go to Exodus or Deuteronomy to see this, Ryan. If you just go back to Genesis and look at polygamy, obviously Jesus in Matthew 19 is saying from the beginning it was not so.
Go ahead, Jerry.
I am still thinking.
Okay.
I understand. I really do. I understand what you've said, and I see all the positive ramifications of it. I don't know. It's just something I need to work on, I guess. I need to think
this,
about.
This is a weighty text. Sure. I appreciate that. Yeah, Otis, go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, very good. I have more of an observation than a question. And what jumps out at me is the fact that we're looking at Jesus's pronouncements. And his pronouncements are against an old law. And even though I really appreciate the idea that many times we study the Bible in spherical nature, that here perhaps we need to see that there is pronouncements of a Messiah, of the Son of God, and he is bringing out a very, very sharp razor. He's bringing out a hatchet, and he's cutting away the implications of a Judaic ethnocentric culture, and he cuts it to its heart, and he is introducing a new law of a new religion. And he's also bringing out this razor, this hatchet, and he's cutting away this modern hedonistic culture that we have. and he's cutting it to its heart, cutting away its filth. And he's saying, leave and cleave, period. I just want to bring that out as the fact that we may finally here need to face that there is a new religion to be contended with, and we lay aside the Judaic connection. Okay, thank you.
Ryan, for some strange reason, we don't have your audio.
Okay, I got it.
Oh, it turned off. That's why.
You got it now. Got it now.
Yeah, one second. There we go. Good now, Bruce.
Yes, sir. You're good.
In my excitement, I unplugged my microphone. And that's certainly a possibility, Otis, but my question would be, why then does the Apostle Paul hold this as a continuing command in 1 Corinthians 7? Because in 1 Corinthians 7, the Apostle Paul does not negate Deuteronomy 24. He upholds Deuteronomy 24. Does that question make sense?
Not to me.
What do you mean, Bruce?
Paul upholds Deuteronomy 24 in 1 Corinthians 7. How so?
Totally. I mean, whenever you look at, again, I'm not getting into canned worms tonight, but I would be very hesitant to see this as a polemic against Deuteronomy 24. I don't think that Jesus in any way is negating Deuteronomy 24. He's merely saying, yeah, this is why Moses allowed it.
Is there a sense in which he is taking on the duties of a prophet, like where Ezekiel was eating off the cakes of dung, and where Hosea was asked to marry a prostitute? You know, it's not. I wouldn't see that as God even commanding them to break his law, but he is in some way, you know, by the Spirit, allowing these prophets to use God's law to try to bring the people back towards his ideal.
Totally.
And so it's just, I don't know how to word it right, but
yeah,
it's like they're like they've been given the law, and now they, as prophets living among the people, are interpreting it and trying to get the people to live in a more harmonious way and bring them back to God's ideal.
Yes, right. And I think that's what Moses is doing even in Deuteronomy 24. Deuteronomy 24 is not, okay, here's divorce for its own reason, whatever. It's Moses, having lived with the people for 40 years, realizes, this is not the best of all possibilities, but metaphorically, children are still going to steal toys. And this is the best way to navigate that in a way that still brings people back to God.
Right. And it's all because we've calloused our hearts.
Exactly.
You know, it's all because of our doing.
Exactly.
And God's just trying to work with us to help us come back and
exactly
his ideal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, Wayne, go ahead.
Does this, seems to me like this falls under the category of, If the people believe something and that's what they want, he will send a strong delusion for the people. If that's if that's what you're wanting, then that's what you're going to get. And where it speaks, wherever it's at, about him sending a strong delusion to you.
Yeah, that's in 2 Peter 2, I believe. Yes.
It seems to me like it falls under that. That's what the people wanted. So, that's what God is going to let them have.
Well, I would really encourage you, read Deuteronomy 24. Wayne, do you think Deuteronomy 24 is trying to what's the right word here? Is he compromising with the sin of the people, or is he saying, I know this is going to happen, and this is the best way to navigate a bad situation?
Well, the strong delusion is the part that gets me is, you know, if I want to do something and I'm bound and determined to do it, then, you know, God is not going to stop me from doing it. You know, is the way I've always looked at that is a strong delusion. You know,
so
if that's what you want.
I'm not understanding. Would we then read Deuteronomy 24 as a strong delusion?
That's what I think when Moses is, because of the hardness of their heart and from the beginning, it wasn't so. But there's a lot of things that we do that we're not supposed to do because of the hardness of our heart. And if go back to the strong delusion that God sends you, if that's what you're bound and determined to do, that's the way I see it. But you know, I may be wrong, but that's
I would be very, 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 very hesitant to call any part of the old law a strong delusion.
Yeah. Well,
because
that's
the
what
old
God,
law was still from God.
The old law was what?
The old law was still from God, and as Paul says in Romans 7, the law is good and holy and righteous.
Yeah. You know, what I'm saying though, the strong delusion is when if I seen you a strong delusion, well, that's bad because I'm not God. But if you're bound and determined to do this, then God's not going to stop you from doing it. Is the way I see the strong delusion that He sends you, That's just the way I've always read
sure,
it.
Yeah,
so.
I think this is definitely an alternative reading to what I'm trying to offer, which I'm fine with. I mean, that's why we need to talk through the text. This is a difficult text, and we need to talk through differing views of this. But I'm just going to say this before continuing. I think we have three options here. We have three options. I think Otis is reading this as Deuteronomy 24 is being cut away. Here's the new religion of Jesus in Matthew 19. Is that an okay summary, Otis?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Wayne is reading this as, here's a strong delusion in Deuteronomy 24, now the truth of Christ in Matthew 19. What I'm reading this as is a concession in Matthew Deuteronomy 24 that is still from God, but then the greater explanation of it in Matthew 19, to where it's not a dichotomy between the two, but a difference of degree. So those are all alternatives. You're going to have to think about it and make your own decision. All right, let's look at verse 9.
Just 1 minute.
No, Jerry, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm going to keep going.
That's a,
no,
that,
sorry.
That's
you
okay.
Can ask me after class. Okay.
Oh, come on.
No, ask me after class. Sorry. We're going on. Verse 9. I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. Again, these two words here, sexual immorality, there have been whole books written about this one Greek word of porneia. Very simply, it is talking about a sexual act. Okay, it's talking about a sexual act. Jesus's conclusion then is, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality marries another commits adultery. Again, from my reading of Deuteronomy 24, this is the exact same thing Deuteronomy 24 was claiming. This is not something different from Deuteronomy 24. This is Jesus saying, yeah, this is what Deuteronomy 24 is claiming, and this is my command. But again, y'all, read Exodus 21, read Deuteronomy 24. Verse 10. The disciples said to him, if such is the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry. Now, the disciples, who knows what their motivation here was, whether they're like, oh my gracious, that's so strict, no one can live up to it, or, oh man, wouldn't we be more righteous if we just didn't marry? I don't know exactly what their motivation was. But he says in verse 11, not everyone can receive this saying, but only those to whom it is given. For there are eunuchs who have been given so from birth. Three categories here. There are eunuchs from birth, eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by men, specifically that would be prisoners of war, etc. And there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by men. Excuse me, there are eunuchs who have been made themselves eunuchs, okay? People who have self-willed to that style of life for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Let the one who is able to receive this receive it. If you go back and you look at, this is Isaiah chapter, let me just put this in the chat for y'all to read. In Isaiah chapter 56, verses 3 through 5, this is a beautiful passage where Isaiah is promising that the eunuchs will come to the Lord. Obviously, I've said this before, I'm convinced that Philip in Acts 8 said that Philip would have said this to the eunuch in Acts chapter 8. I have no doubt in my mind. Jesus is saying, particularly, look at verse 11. Verse 11 and verse 13. Not everyone can receive the saying. I think he's saying about eunuchs. Verse 12. Let the one who is able to receive this receive it. Here's what I think Jesus is saying. Yeah, there are those who either by occasions of birth, because of what others have done to them, or because decisions that they themselves have made, will live as eunuchs. Let them receive it. Notice what Jesus says. Not everyone is going to be able to receive this. And he's not saying that the eunuch is more blessed than the married person. But nor is he saying the married person is more blessed than the single person. He's giving blessing to both. And here's, I think, the encouragement of Matthew 19. Both the one who is in a marriage that God has joined together and the one who is living a life single for God is blessed. And that is the one who is blessed in the kingdom of heaven. And that's where we're ending tonight. Well, y'all, I'm sure like Jerry, you probably still have 100 questions. Great. Great, 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 great. I did not aim for this class to be the final word on marriage, divorce, and remarriage that has ever been spoken. But I hope it starts with questions. And if anything, as always, I hope I've spurred you to read the Old Testament more closely with these texts in mind. Because understanding with everything, understanding the Old Testament context is so helpful to working out a lot of these questions. And y'all let me know. I received some private questions tonight that I have written down, and I will definitely add to my list to preach on. But let me know your additional questions about this, and we can talk about those one-on-one, small group, or in a sermon series. All right? Well, I am done tonight, Heath. And I will turn it over to you. Best of luck.
Yeah, thanks.